Hey, George, how are you doing?
Is this Colin?
Yeah.
Hey, man.
Yeah. Appreciate you doing this. When I was growing up, most of my time outside of school was spent outside. And typically when I ask people, you know, anyone over the age of 30 tends to have similar experiences. But yeah, maybe the first question for you is just, does that resonate? Did you, what was your time spent, when you weren't in school?
I grew up in a compromised neighborhood, so most of my outdoor time, like, you know, there's being outside is not the same thing as being outdoorsy, right?
Right.
So all we did was just ride bicycles and get into trouble. and so we were outside in the neighborhood, for sure, but we weren't being outdoorsy by any stretch. What would happen is every now and then, in the summer, my friend and I would go camping for a week or two.
Yeah.
We would do that a little bit. His dad, my mom would let us go up there, and they thought it would be good for us to learn some independence, you know, and have a bit of fun out there in the woods. So we would go out, and just the two of us, we were like 13, 14, 15 years old, and we would camp ourselves for a couple of weeks. That would happen only in the summer once, and pretty much the rest of the time would be us just riding our bicycles around and doing the regular stuff that young boys would do, because we didn't have access to, or I didn't anyway have access to the outdoorsy life. That was part of the deal for us.
Yeah. And I think there probably is that difference between just sort of being outside and that outdoorsy element. But I mean, similar youth, just in terms of riding bikes around the neighborhood and, as you said, getting into trouble. But I think there's just a sense of, do you get the sense that that's not happening as much anymore? I mean, there's just this notion that there aren't as many kids riding their bikes around the neighborhood.
Well, I think what happens is parents don't let their kids out of their eyesight anymore.
Right.
You know? And also another huge shift, I don't see it as much, but I'll tell you, like, the thing that we did every day was play street hockey.
Right.
Street hockey was everything, because none of us could afford equipment, none of us knew how to skate for a lot of the most part, right? We didn't play organized hockey by any stretch, but we played street hockey all the time.
Yeah.
I don't see that as much anymore.
No.
You know, the way that it used to be, that kind of idea. But yeah, I mean, like, I would disappear for hours and hours in afternoons, and even sometimes a couple days on end, I would just go for a ride and hang out with my friends. And I'm sure my mom worried about me, but my mom was pretty cool about letting me kind of learn life. She was protective.
Yeah.
But, and try to instill these smart values in me. But my mom, you know, didn't know how to street-proof me.
No.
Just kind of it's almost like social Darwinism, you know, you just kind of get out there and you figure your way through it. I think part of the reason I am the way I am now, as an adult, and the way I approach my career, a lot of it has to do with the fact that when I was a kid, my mom allowed me to learn how to be, to learn how to manage my outdoor time, to learn how to develop independence, and to learn how to be scared, you know. Kids today don't deal with fear anymore.
Right.
Not the same way. Like, we'd be out there walking in, you know, through a park. Everybody would warn you and tell you, don't go through this park at night. You go through the park, something bad would happen, and you're terrified and you're running away. Like, you got to manage your fear.
Right.
You know, and that's all stuff that I learned as a kid. Now, I don't have kids, so who knows what it would be like if I did.
But, I mean, I think that's the follow-up question is, I just find it interesting that, you know, it's our generation that had all that unsupervised time, and our parents just kind of let us be, whether it was riding bikes around the neighborhood or whatever. But now our generation, and I don't have kids either, but our generation that are having kids seem to...
Because we're soft, man. We're soft. Think about our grandparents, right?
Yeah.
So our grandparents went through the war, depending on where they're from, but certainly a lot of them had to deal with the war. So our parents were children of a war generation, right?
Yeah.
We're not.
Right.
We're a soft generation, if we're being honest.
Right.
And you can see it in our kids. You can see it in our kids because kids rule the roost in a way they didn't used to. You know, the idea of, like, you know, the amount of time kids spend on screens now.
Yeah.
Like, that's crazy. You know, that's crazy. That is a really strong, and that's going to have an impact on the kind of kids that we turn out down the road.
Right. So if you fast forward a bit to where you are today, you know, fully immersed in mass media, social media, you know, I'm always interested, can you pinpoint sort of the best part for you about using that technology to do what you do?
Best part for me is I get to share songs and have songs shared with me.
Right.
You know, so I get to, I get, window into other people's worlds and they get a window into mine. And, you know, my favorite time to be on social networking is after midnight.
Right.
Because that's when you catch people. We're all in the same place. We're all really tired, but we're slightly vulnerable. We're maybe a little bit more honest than we ought to be, and we just share stuff. I like that.
Right.
You know, I like that. Social networking is a tool, I suppose, for the career, but I don't overly focus on that, you know.
Right.
Because what's the point? I'm not going to invent the internet, right? So where am I sort of trying to master it? No, I just want to have a good time today. And so I want to make sure that I can, you know, I can utilize it in the best or the most effective way. But I want it to still be, you know, filled with humanity. And I find late at night on social networking is the best time for that.
Right. Do you, you're connected through so many different outlets. Is it hard to keep up sometimes? I mean, do you have to schedule time to tweet, or is it more just random?
I just do it when I feel like it.
Right.
Yeah. I think about what's the best use of it, but I don't really want to. Yeah, I just don't want to have that life, you know. I don't want to have that life where I have to spend time to tweet, you know, or schedule time to tweet. I just want it to happen naturally.
Right.
I want it to happen naturally. I want my whole life to be as authentic an experience as possible.
Right.
You know, I want to live this life. I want to live the hell out of it. I want to enjoy the hell out of it. I want to live it on my terms as much as possible.
Yeah.
And, you know, the idea of social networking is this construct. I mean, I love it, dude. I mean, I'm into it. But if it's unnatural, I'm not doing it. So I don't want it to be forced upon me. I want to just do what I want to do with it. And I think everybody should do it that way.
Right.
Like, I'm not trying to make money off social networking. I'm not some behind-the-scenes guru telling everybody here's the best way to advance your goals using Twitter. I don't care.
Right.
Like, I really just believe in an honest human connection. And I think you can really facilitate that with social networking. But it has to have an honest human connection for me to be interested in it. So it has to come off authentically, you know?
Yeah. Are there times when you disconnect, where you can get away from it all?
Yeah, totally. Yeah, I mean, I didn't... a lot of my friends think that I'm married to my phone, you know?
Right.
But it's funny that I'm actually not. You know, there's days that go by without me doing anything on social networking, and I'm fine with it.
Yeah.
Yeah, like totally. I think the people who work on the web team here would prefer that didn't happen.
Right, right.
You know, because it's their job to make sure that, you know, we're growing and all that stuff. But I, but yeah, this day is right over. Because, you know, I'm 40 years old. You know?
Yeah.
What am I going to do? You know, well, I just think if today's the day, I don't feel like going, I won't feel like, I never plan it. It's not like today's the day off of social networking. It's just like, I'm off.
Yeah.
But I love, my favorite one is Instagram, right? Because Instagram is you just share photos, so you can let people see what you see.
Right.
And that's interesting to me, as opposed to writing 140 characters of something witty or clever or, you know, a thoughtful Facebook post. Like, that's just, it's good to do that, if it, you know, every now and then. But Instagram to me is like a nice, beautiful way to share stuff.
Yeah. Is social media where it's at then? Have you said in past interviews that there's a good chunk of TV that just sucks these days?
It's a good chunk of everything that's awesome these days. A good chunk of everything that sucks these days.
Right.
I think we're in the best era of television ever.
Yeah.
Yeah, TV's never better consistently across the board than it is today. Like, there's amazing shows on. Go back to The Sopranos, or from The Sopranos to 6 Feet Under, to The Wire, to Breaking Bad, to Californication, to Modern Family, to Arrested Development, to Jackass. You know, we're in the era of great television.
Right. Is there, is there an intersection somewhere where sort of mass media and the outdoors meet?
Or mass media, do you mean social network, or do you mean television?
Take it either way.
Well, I think that, you know, magazines and TV shows shouldn't just be there to entertain you. I think they should entertain you, but I think they should also be there to show you what's out there, right?
Right.
And those nature shows I watched growing up connected me to parts of the world I wouldn't otherwise get to go to, and then when I did get to go there, it was an experience that
Yeah.
And I sat on the side of the hill and I watched a minor league or like a rec league baseball game go down.
Right.
That's the outdoors to me. Because I'm from Toronto, right? I'm not from Vancouver. If I was from Vancouver, I would hike the seawall. I would, you know, go snowboarding. I would do all the stuff that people do.
Yeah.
You know, in Vancouver, it's a super outdoorsy place. You know, kayak in the sea, all that surf. I don't do that. I'm from Toronto. There is no outdoors here for me, right? So the outdoors for me, like, I live right downtown. I work right downtown. I go for walks all the time. I sit in a park all the time.
Yeah.
But there's no real outdoors. In fact, the most outdoorsy place in my neighborhood is my roof. I have a green roof. And so I sit on my roof and I look at the city, right?
Right.
And so I really like that. Also, I live in California as well. And in LA is where I'm far more outdoorsy, and then I hike all the time in the hills and the canyons.
Yeah.
All the time. And I swim in the ocean all the time.
Right.
That to me is where it's at. To me, there is nothing better in this world on a beautiful sunny day than going to the ocean.
Yeah.
That's it. That's where I'm at my most peaceful place. That's where I can easily quit my job, move down there, and disconnect from everybody, because there's something about being in the ocean for me that is perfect.
Yeah.
I don't understand why it is that way for me on a cellular level, because I'm an urban boy, I'm a Toronto boy.
Yeah.
But that experience in the ocean to me is incredible. So I have this kind of weird split life, ultra-urban life in Toronto, and then an urban life in LA, but the urban life has hiking and ocean, you know.
Right. Yeah.
I don't need social networking for that. I leave my phone in my car.
Right.
You know, I don't need technology for that. I don't want it anymore. We're overstimulated. There's too much noise going on anyway.
Right.
That if you can't be quiet with yourself or quiet with your friends, you got a bigger problem, you know?
Yeah. Yeah. You know, in watching you and listening to you over the past few years, a constant theme that I seem to pick up on that you seem to be interested in is whether it's through the stories you tell or the questions you ask your guests, is what shapes us as Canadians. And I guess, you know, although more of us are moving to urban centers, how do you think the land of this country shapes us as Canadians?
Well,
right.
Because I think that we are a people that, are we being honest with each other here? I think we're a people that says the environment matters to us, but we don't vote like the environment matters to us.
Right.
Right. We're not a people. We talk about how beautiful Canada's outdoors are, and we talk about it as it relates to the history of this country. We have all this stuff, but if you look at all the choices we make as voters and consumers,
yeah,
we're not really putting our money where our mouth is.
Right.
So, yeah, when I was a kid, I'd read Farley Mullick books, and I would dream about putting my feet in Hudson's Bay.
Right.
Because that's what the previous, you know, the teachers were from that previous generation. So they would introduce you to literature of that era.
Right.
You know, we don't have the same connection with it, especially if you're an urban kid.
Can that?
I don't know what it's like growing up in Elliott Lake. Maybe it's different.
Right.
But in Toronto, it's certainly not. When I look at the kind of media we consume, the kind of books that become bestsellers, I look at the choices we make as consumers or with our votes, and I go, well, this country doesn't really, you know, really fight for the environment the way we say we do when we're surveyed about what issues matter to us, right?
Right.
So I think that there's a kind of a bridge generation, which is, you know, I'm 30, I'm 40, so this group here who kind of remembers what it was like and sees where it's going.
Right.
I don't know if the next generation is going to be connected to the Canadian great outdoors. I don't think people identify with that version of Canada. I don't know if Algonquin Park, again, I'm not saying this like having the answer, I don't. I'm not sure if Algonquin Park means the same to a 12-year-old today as it did to me when I was 15 and I connected to it, you know?
Right.
Because the mystique, what they would sell, this idea of, you know, Algonquin, go up there towards the Canadian Shield, go up to Churchill, Manitoba, the Arctic, the far north, all that stuff, right? That kind of mystique around that, I don't know if it's still there.
Can we bring it back, though? I mean, is it a lost cause, or are there ways to engage the future generations in that stuff again?
I think you could, but I think it's less about us and more about them. It's what do they want.
Right.
You know, it's what do they want. I think you need an education system and a government that really cares about that. I think you need to show kids, you need to take kids
Right.
To open kids' minds. We're not in the habit of that. We're in the era of, we're in the era of the individual in this country.
Right.
When we used to be in the era of the collective. And, that idea, that shared experience, that knowledge, like, I'm sure there's tons of teachers who are doing it, right?
Right.
I'm sure there are tons of teachers, I don't know. But I think culturally I've seen a shift where, the country has just moved away from that.
Right.
It's moved away from that. I don't know that I'm sure it can move back. I'm not sure that anybody wants it to.
Right.
I do. I think it's, again, I'm as urban as it gets, right?
Yeah.
But I love sitting by a waterfall.
Right.
And I remember the first time I saw a moose, it blew my mind. Your life is different the day after you look at a moose's eyes. Yeah. Like, it really is,
Yeah.
Or, that moment when you're going through a park and a black bear runs by with its cubs.
Yeah.
That's a moment, man. Holy cow.
Yeah. No, I couldn't.
That's important, I think, for someone, for kids to see that.
It is, yeah. Yeah. Last week, you had Jane Goodall on your show.
She's doing a great job with Roots and Shoots. She's done a great job of making sure it's not a lost cause.
Right. She talked about teaching children the value of those wild spaces, and she said, unless that next generation cares, we're going to be in a bit of trouble. I guess I always wonder, if kids are spending less and less time outside, how do they build a relationship with those wild spaces? How can they, how can they care about endangered species or climate change if they're not even spending that much time outside anymore? Is there something to that, or is that just a pessimistic outlook?
Well, I don't think it's pessimism. I think it's realism.
Right.
But again, it comes down to parents and educators, right? And ultimately, they're in charge. But it's the adults who have to lobby regulators and want to market that version of Canada, right? For that relationship. Here's the question I would ask you. Do you think the education system and the government cares about the relationship between wild spaces and the people?
I think these days the education system is caring more about the inactivity levels in students. They see that research, so they're all about getting kids more active. But
that's great. That's a huge thing, right?
Right, but it's further down on the list in terms of getting kids connected to nature.
Yeah, I mean, I would hope that it's important for kids to be connected to nature. I know that it was for me, but inactivity levels are directly related to health, and maybe that's the start.
Right.
Maybe that's the start. But I think we're just becoming, we're an urbanized people. We're a technologically driven people. Skyscrapers are our forests.
Right.
For urban kids.
Right.
And I think a parent valuing their green space with their kids is the beginning of this. I think that's how it starts. I think you can do it. I know why Jane Goodall says what she says. I understand. I mean, it makes sense to me that if you don't get kids to care, it will go away.
Right.
But what we are, dude, we're in the era of everybody treating it as if the economic growth is the only thing that matters.
Yep.
Economic growth is the only thing that matters, and it trumps everything else. Like, it trumps your decision. So, and it's mutually exclusive from respecting the outdoors.
Right.
And valuing it. I don't think it has to be that way. Of course, you can marry the two.
Right.
In fact, I think for us to be a successful people, we have to find a way to bridge the two. Interweave them. But that's not it. Like, this is a country that allows companies to poison lakes and river systems where Canadians live.
Right.
And anybody who protests it is an enemy of growth, right?
Right.
Is that asinine oversimplification? From those who have the relentless pursuit of making some other company money.
Right.
So much so that they're willing to expose a Canadian, to health risks because of it.
Right.
So, I mean, it's a screwed up time.
Yeah.
So what I would suggest is I don't worry too much. I mean, obviously I have this idea that I'm talking about the government and teachers and all that. But, failing them, making it a better place. It's up to the parents and the communities to build within their neighborhood, right?
Right.
And if everybody does that, one-on-one in neighborhoods across the country, then there's your movement. Right. That's how you create the next generation of people. You know, these people who are the way they are now, with reckless, you know, relentless economic pursuit, they're the children of the 80s who were all about, you know, the conservative economic plan. That's who these people are now.
Right.
So you just have to create an environment that fosters people who care about wild spaces and care about green spaces and care about outdoors. And over time, when they become the leaders, hopefully that they don't turn their back on it.
Right.
But you have to start it, you know, very, very locally.
Right. Well, I guess it's, you know, I think obviously part of what you do is storytelling, and those stories sort of shape our culture and history. But, you know, are those of us who care about this issue, those of us who care about getting kids outside, you know, the benefits that come from spending outside, are we telling the story wrong? Could we be telling the story differently? Agreed. Yeah. As I sort of doing the run across Canada, it struck me, even though I stuck mostly to Trans-Canada, you know, it just struck me what an amazing backyard we have in Canada. It's one of the best in the world. I know you've traveled Canada extensively. Are there any parts of Canada or any spaces in Canada that have had a lasting impact on you?
Yeah, I went up to Churchill, Manitoba, and got out in the tundra buggies, and was able to convince the people to let me get off the buggy.
Right.
And I ran across the tundra, and I put my feet in Hudson's Bay.
Right.
And that, I think that's going to stay with me for a long time, in Hudson's Bay.
Yeah.
And also, you know, I drove across the country when I was 18.
Mm-hmm.
And, no, I guess I was 20 maybe. And, you know, when you get out of Calgary, past Kenmore, and you get towards Jasper and all that.
Yep.
That's pretty special.
Mm-hmm.
Being out there for sure.
Yeah.
And it's so different because we have this, you know, we say the word Canada like it means something, like it's one thing.
Right.
But the Toronto experience is so fundamentally different from the Calgary experience.
Sure.
And the Calgary experience is pretty different from the Thunder Bay experience, and they're both foreign from the Vancouver experience.
Right.
You know, because we're just so big. And Toronto is just so not the Canada you see on postcards.
Right.
I love Toronto. This is my home. This is my baby, this city, right?
Yeah.
So my outdoorsy experience, the parts of the city that I love the most are, you know, Trinity Velvets Park and, you know, in downtown Toronto. Saturday afternoon, there's amazing. My favorite animals in the world, man, are raccoons.
Yeah.
They are raccoons and pigeons and squirrels, because, you know, when cities were built up and all the other nature scattered.
Right.
You know, they all got scared and took off. Raccoons stayed. They own this town.
Yeah.
There are more raccoons in Toronto, I bet, than there are people that own this town. And it's fantastic.
Yeah.
Sitting at night and watching a bunch of raccoons do their thing. It's the closest I'm going to get to wildlife.
Yeah.
Like proper wildlife, you know.
Well, I think that's, you know, even though, you know, Toronto's one of the more urban centers in the world, you still, I think that's the unique thing about living in Canada. I mean, even within Toronto, you still have those green spaces. You still have those elements of nature at play, which is pretty cool.
I agree. We don't have nearly enough, to be honest with you. I think Toronto's got some green spaces, but not nearly enough.
Right.
Yeah, like not nearly enough. I don't think it's a city council that respects it. I don't think that they value it the way they should. I think that they're just more interested in tearing down buildings and putting up condos.
Right.
Ugly ones that don't even care about the eyesores.
Right.
Like, yeah, I don't think that, and I say this as a man who loves Toronto, I don't think the people who have been in charge of the city for very long have really taken that into account.
Right.
You know, I don't think they valued it nearly enough. Trinity Velvets Park is the only big park on the West End, and it's not that big.
Right.
You know, High Park is not in the downtown core. It's not where we all live. You know, they built all these condominiums and let all these people move down, which I think is amazing. I love that. I love condos. I love the fact that there's density in the city.
Yeah.
But where do they go? Where do we go now?
Right.
To go hang out. Where do we go that doesn't require a car? Where can we go be? The waterfront in this city has been poorly managed for so long.
Yeah.
You know, that they need to fix that. If Toronto can fix the waterfront, which I know everybody says.
Right.
But it's not that hard to do.
Right.
Just do it.
Yeah.
Right? If they did it, I think kids would have a much better relationship with the outdoors. But I grew up, and I've never been in Lake Ontario.
Right.
Like, I've never touched the water in Lake Ontario.
Nor.
40 years old, I've been living this whole city my whole life.
Right.
Because it was too polluted.
Yeah.
You know, so as much as I love the small green spaces we have, I don't think we have nearly enough in this city.
Right. Maybe just the last question is, you know, students have a lot to navigate. Are there any lessons learned from your youth that are worth passing on?
Yeah, get a bicycle.
Yeah.
Seriously, get a bicycle and go for a ride.
Right.
Right. Yeah. Explore.
Yeah.
Explore. Be smart. Don't be stupid. You know, but explore.
And I guess that's directed just as much to the parents as it is to the kids.
Sure. Sure.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, again, the bravery of being out of range. I don't have kids. I don't got to worry about it. Right?
Yeah.
But I just know that what I can speak from my experience is that those times riding with my friends on bicycles, that's the thing.
Right.
That's the thing. You know, that's the value that I remember. And, you know, I ride motorcycles across the country now. And I always think about when I was riding bicycles across the neighborhood.
Yeah.
It's one of the same, you know?
Yeah. Cool. I appreciate you doing this, George.
And I hope that was okay. I hope that wasn't too heavy, man.
No, it was great. Enjoy the rest of your day, and thanks again.
We'll be
all right. Take care. Bye.